Need to stretch for a minute. Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Scott Harrison, de la Orquesta Sinfónica de Detroit. Y gracias por el invitado y la oportunidad que compartir con ustedes nuestra orquesta, nuestra experiencia y nuestra historia. And that's all I'll say in Spanish. I should leave now. I want to tell you a story today because I think that digital media, social media, is about stories and it's about sharing. And so that's what I'm going to do is share with you how an orchestra in a city that faced so many difficult challenges not long ago and is still facing difficult challenges, how an orchestra rose from those challenges and sort of changed the tune and the perception, and how digital media played a really effective role in that story. So what have we done at the DSO? Why are we so excited about our future? Why are we pursuing new heights of artistic excellence? Why are we reinvesting in our community? It's because, among other things, we're embracing the opportunities that digital offers us. Like I said, it's been a very changing and challenging and rocky environment in Detroit over the past few years, frankly, over the past 20, even 30 years. I think everyone knows that the bedrock of the Detroit economy is the auto industry. Well, the auto industry had faced some of its most pressing challenges ever within the last 5 or 6 years. And in the midst of those challenges, the Detroit economy started to unravel. Unemployment soared. Foreclosures on homes increased, right? And families ended up leaving the city. And you can imagine, for institutions that rely on philanthropic support, because in the United States, the primary means of revenue for nearly every orchestra and, frankly, nearly every cultural institution is philanthropic. For the institutions that rely on philanthropic support, this became an incredibly difficult environment in which to operate. I'll give you just one example. Corporate support nearly cut in half overnight. I mean, we were an orchestra that once brought in $4 million annually from corporations. We now are lucky to get $2 million annually from corporations. We had to change our tune. And what happened internally? The expense structure became somewhat unsustainable. We had to start cutting programs. We had to lay off staff. We went into debt. And in 2010, as perhaps many of you know, we faced one of the most difficult labor situations in the history of American orchestras, when we endured a 6-month strike when our management and our musicians could not come to terms on what the future would look like. Ultimately, 6 months later, that contract was solved with a solution that required sacrifice and new commitments from everybody. So those are some of the challenges we were facing in Detroit and at other places in the U.S. And I don't think it's too different in many ways from what you might be facing in Spain or in Europe. Because while the particulars and the specific revenue streams might be different, I think it's a universal that we can no longer rely on the traditional structures to sustain us. And if what we do is close our eyes and put our fingers in our ears and just say, this is who we are and this is the way it is, we're going to sink. But if we're willing to face and adapt those new realities, if we're willing to think differently about who we are and who we serve and how we serve them, I think all of us have a real chance to find success in the future. And so ultimately, this is a good story. It's a happy story, and it's one I'm very excited to share with you. And I got so excited telling you my story, I forgot to advance in my slides. So, what we said in Detroit 4 years ago when we came out of that strike, when the concerts came back on, we put to ourselves a very difficult question because, again, when no one else believed in us, we did. We thought we could have a very bright future. And one of the pillars on which we were willing to stake that future was this claim: could we become the most accessible orchestra on the planet? It's a bold claim, it's an audacious claim, but it's also a simple one because of its clarity and its focus. We believed that if we answered that call, we could change the perception of our institution, we could begin to reverse some of the economic decline, and we believed that we could start to actually change the culture. You heard Doug say earlier that culture comes first and strategy comes second. And so that was what this was about as much as anything else, was having an orchestra and an environment that embraced access and opportunity. And that's what our ecosystem of digital is all about, what I like to call the DSO Live ecosystem after our hashtag DSO Live that we use to promote our webcasts. It's an ecosystem that connects with local audiences but also builds globally. It's an ecosystem that seeks to promote the institution in a unique and different way than it had ever been promoted before. You know, I like to share a couple facts because I think these facts speak to why this has been so successful for us and why we decided to invest so much of our time, our resources, and our energy into the digital space. 4 years ago, three, 4 years ago, already 76% of the DSO audience was watching some form of video online. This was before we had launched the webcasts, but just in general, YouTube, Vimeo, Hulu, whatever the site might be, people were used to going online to watch video. It wasn't true that cultural audiences were not tech savvy, they were. Well, what have we found 3 years later? I'm kind of giving the story away to some degree, but we found that now 91% of our audience watches video of some form online. Essentially, our entire audience is used to operating online. Why wouldn't we meet them there? What about social media? Well, 3 years ago, 62% of the DSO audience was using social media in some sort of regular occurrence. Now, 77% of the DSO audience is using social media in some sort of regular occurrence. So again, the point is our audience is there. They use these tools. They're part of their daily lives. So it's almost irresponsible of us if we don't engage with them there, if we don't meet them there, if we don't find ways to make our content relevant and exciting and meaningful in those sort of venues. So I mentioned for a brief second our webcast, and that's where I want to start my story today. I'm going to give you three examples of three genres in which we're operating, and the first one is these live for Markshire Hall webcasts. And by the way, there was a flyer that I think went around or will go around later that lists dates of the upcoming webcast. So I hope you can tune in sometime and check them out yourself because that's, of course, the easiest way to get what they are. You know, any big project and any ambitious project, of course, requires very dedicated friends. So I have to always take a moment to thank three of our really great friends. The Ford Motor Company Fund makes these webcasts possible. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, who's active not only in Miami but in communities across Detroit, makes these programs possible. And most recently, you'll hear me talk about a new initiative, an educational digital initiative, and our friends at the Berman Foundation make that possible. So before I go any further, I'm going to take a minute and actually like to share with you 30 seconds of video. So this is what Live from Markshire Hall looks like. Let's take a look, please. Thank you.
We produced our first live.
So that is, of course, Ravel's Mother Goose, the finale, live from Orchestra Hall in Detroit, Michigan, from our stage. So the good old days, and someone earlier had asked a question about how do you get started? What's step one? And for us, step one was, again, a little bit audacious. Step one for us was not even a week after the music returned, not even a week after we returned from the strike. We said, our first concert is going to be on the web. This is a new day. This is a new era. Our first concert is going to be on the web. And we had no idea how to do that. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the people. We didn't have the equipment. We didn't have the expertise. So in our case, we looked outside for friends and partners. We called our local public television station, Detroit Public Television, and said, hey, can you get down here and help us make a webcast? And they said, yes, we can. You know, we're behind the DSO just like you are. We want to make it come back. So we actually, this was a storage closet. And we gave them a storage closet that was, you know, not much bigger than about this. And they packed some equipment in there and ran some wires. And that's how we operated for the first 2.5, 3 years of the project. Today, we've got these beautiful digital cameras. It took us 2.5 years, 3 years of proving what we were doing and why we should be trusted and why we should be invested in to be able to get the support and the funding to install these cameras. But now we have a state-of-the-art robotic production system with a new video a new video control room. And as we speak right now, and I'll get again to this in just a second, as we speak right now, we're producing our 79th live webcast from Detroit. So it's really amazing to have looked back over those 3.5 years and be really proud of what we've done and what we've accomplished. I want to share some stats, but I was thinking again about what Doug said earlier, because he made such a terrific point that the stats are just the starting point, because of course we can't compete with Lady Gaga. We're not going to have 10, 15 million people watching a single video. But if the stats are a gateway to engagement and to investing in a new sort of audience, then I think they're really powerful. So here's where we are so far with DSO Live. We've had 600,000 cumulative viewers since we started the project 3.5 years ago. 100-plus countries those viewers come from. By the way, Spain is 9th in viewership, and Spain is 6th in audience composition on our Facebook page. So thank you to all of you. Do we have any DSO Facebook fans in here? Okay, they're not in this room, but they're somewhere. Has anyone here watched a webcast? Okay, a few. And some of your compatriots are doing so as well. We have 15,000 subscribers to our webcast. These are people who sign up for our alerts and emails, which I think is a pretty good base from where we are so far. And we've attracted 2 7-figure capital gifts to help ensure that the perpetuity and the capital investment in the project is going to allow us to have a really robust future with the project. And like I said, we've built a very distinctive and very clear brand for our webcast. It's the brand that you heard me allude to a few slides ago as a question, but now one that we carry with pride and sort of view as our daily challenge, and that's to be the most accessible orchestra on the planet, la orquestra más accesible del planeta. And it's something that we know is audacious, and we know it's a bit crazy, and we know it's a challenge, but if we hold ourselves to that standard and see that vision out on the horizon, it helps guide the questions and the decisions that we make every day and helps us figure out how to pursue different opportunities. And how do we live the brand? How does this actually translate to the product that you see on your screen? Well, live is always free. That's key to the DSO. We're actually only now starting to investigate what the secondary opportunities could look like for archiving and revenue and monetization. But we started with the proposition that live would always be free. No sign-ins required. You don't even have to give us your email. People sign up for the alerts as at their choosing, but you just go to the page and it's there and you watch it. We do real-time social interaction. So 2 staff members are tweeting, Facebooking, live streaming, live during every production. So it's a two-way sort of interaction, and it's a community that we're building. Device portability. So you can watch on mobile, on tablet. You can watch on over-the-top devices like Apple TV or Roku. We try to pursue multiple viewing channels, so we work with partners like Medici TV, Paraclassics, and others. We've partnered up with PBS so that there's more channels and places to watch our content. And then finally, we strive for an accessibility and a friendliness and even a fun nature in the content and tone of what we do behind the scenes and around the content. And that's maybe the most heretical part of all, because the idea that you could have fun or be loose or be a little quirky in a classical music or a cultural environment is sometimes a difficult hurdle for people. But we've found that we can have a great, brilliant performance on stage and wrap around it a real sort of window of openness and accessibility. What we've really found is that the webcasts have become the calling card for the institution. They're our best face to the world. And we see this in informal ways, but we also see this in very literal ways, because thanks to the webcast, we've been able to gain press coverage in outlets like the New York Times, Gramophone Magazine, the AP, the Los Angeles Times, the New Yorker, to name just a few. Also, I don't know if the soccer stadiums, they have jumbotrons on them here where they have all the ads and you can see the action. Well, we have jumbotrons too at our baseball stadiums. At the past 2 playoffs, the Detroit Tigers, our local baseball team, we created videos for them of us playing the fight song for the Detroit Tigers, and those played on the jumbotron at Detroit Tigers Stadium, something that can only happen with this sort of environment and this sort of willingness and culture that allows us to experiment in this way. So I know one of the questions on everybody's minds is, what about ticket sales? Does this hurt ticket sales? Does this depress audience? Does this impact your revenue negatively? Let me unequivocally say no. And that's the same word in any language, I know. What we have found is that over the last 3.5 years that we've been presenting this webcast product, our subscription audience has grown 27%, and our single ticket audience, those who buy one-off tickets, has grown 16%. What about on the donor side? When we had only about 4,500 donor households 4 or 5 years ago, we now have over 10,000 donor households. And these are the individuals that make contributions annually to the institution. Again, in American cultural institutions, individual donations from families and households is a very critical part of the revenue pie. Oh, I must have hit the button. So, what does that ultimately mean? It doesn't mean that the webcasts are responsible. I'm not saying the webcasts are driving or creating those sales. What I'm saying is the webcasts are part of an environment where we've created new awareness and promotion and exposure for the institution. So alongside a traditional marketing and communications plan that includes everything you might imagine, from direct mail to advertisements to web and email, the webcasts are playing their role in promoting the institution and making people want to be a part of what we offer. And so I've alluded a few times to something very special. It's sort of what's next for us. And I said there's something happening right now. Well, it's the morning in Detroit and across America right now. And what we're doing is we're live webcasting our first educational concerts for students. We call it Live from Orchestra Hall Classroom Edition. It has the slogan, Let's Play. But Live from Orchestra Hall Classroom Edition are concerts specifically designed for children, 45 minutes long. Like many of you, they're concerts that we already do. But we've invested in them in a slightly different way. We brought in a producer with experience on Sesame Street. We brought in a host, and we've sort of packaged them up a little bit to now go for the web. They're accompanied by curriculum materials and learning resources. I mean, just to count it off again, learning resources that match the National Music Education standards. They're designed for students with engaging content and really compelling personalities. As we move forward with the project in the future, we're going to look at how we can have immersive technology. And we're making an impact in Detroit first, and then we're later going to expand it across the nation. And can we possibly be America's education concert provider? So again, this is happening live right now. It's my colleagues are back in Detroit producing, but some of the things we've had happen is 300 schools in Detroit signed up for these webcasts. Now, you might say, couldn't those schools come to the concert hall? Well, yes, but we can't fit 300 schools in the concert hall for one concert. And in Detroit, like a lot of municipalities, even having the funding to take buses to the concert hall can be a barrier. It's not as easy as it used to be for schools to get outside and go on field trips. 125 additional schools across the U.S. signed up. So the total projection is that by the end of the day, we will have had 40,000 students in our country experience classical music and have a rich, immersive, engaging cultural experience thanks to the DSO and thanks to Live from Orchestra Hall Classroom Edition. And like I said, we have another audacious statement we've put out there. Could we potentially be America's education concert provider? So that's the world of webcasts. I want to move next into the world of social. My hope is, as I go through this presentation, you might find for yourself some opportunities where you could see yourself plugging in, things that might resonate with your capabilities or your ideas or the culture at your institution. Because ultimately, I think having a broad mix of things is what makes you successful. Because the other thing I always like to point out is for all the successes that I put up on the screen, and this goes back to what, again, Doug said earlier, we've had our failures too. We've tried things that haven't worked, and I should probably at some point do a presentation around those because, like the adage goes, you learn as much from your failures or more from your failures than you do from your successes. But I think that willingness to try and experiment is really important to what we're doing in Detroit. So here's my first social story for you. It's called, this is a quick trigger finger. Here's my first social story for you. It's called DSO Selfie. So I don't know if this is ubiquitous in Spain as it is in the U.S. right now, but everyone's taking selfies, right? So we said, can't we bring this experience into the orchestra? One of the things that's unique about the DSO is that we allow people to take pictures in the concert hall, not during the performance, but around and before, and actually sometimes people do it during too, and as long as they're quiet about it and don't make a lot of noise, we don't go up and wag our finger at them. But we just had a very simple idea. Take your pictures, post them online with our hashtag, DSO Selfie, and we pick some winners to come to concerts. And what's the output of an event like that? You get a picture like this. You get an experience of two young, bright, smiling people so ecstatic to be at the concert hall, an experience they share with all their friends and networks. They build a credibility and a validity for the DSO that we could never create for ourselves. Them saying to their peers, hey, look, we're at Orchestra Hall, and it's pretty cool, I'm having a good time, is so much more powerful than us as a DSO saying, come to the concerts and have a great time. That's the impact of activities like this. And what's cool is, even though the contest has ended, the audience has taken control of the project. They're still posting DSO selfies, and we're finding more and more all these different ways to incorporate this sort of take control and have the audience give us their perspective, incorporating that idea into other projects. So by the way, this is an example of one of our musicians. Our musicians got just as excited about the selfie project as our audience. And so our third horn player, Joanna Yarbrough, in advance of a rehearsal for Mahler's Third Symphony, took a picture of all nine horns. She put this on her Facebook page. She got 250 likes. I don't know about you. I can't get 25 likes on the pictures I post on my page. But then the DSO saw it and said, hey, Joanna, can we share this on our official page? She said, great. We shared it. We got thousands of likes. It was one of the most popular posts of the year because it was real and it was genuine, and it kind of lifted the curtain up. It's very similar to what Luke said about the Philharmonia. We have all these great individuals and personalities on stage. Let's let them share it with us. Then this idea of giving the audience control and sharing these things in a much more powerful way, we decided to take it into an even bigger stage. We start each season with a week of community concerts, where we go to four or five locations around Detroit and present free concerts for people to experience the DSO. And for the last 3 years, we've done this project in coordination with the DTE Energy Foundation, which is one of our most generous sponsors. And as we were speaking with DTE about what's the next level of this relationship, they said, how can we get people more involved? How can we make use of these social and technology tools we hear that you're making such great use of at the DSO? So we came up with three ways that we could get our audiences involved and invested into the community concerts in a much different way. So the first, like I said, there were three goals. We wanted to deliver value in a new way to our sponsor. We wanted to merge accessibility in our community with accessibility happening online. And we wanted to create memorable experiences before, during, and after the concert. So the first thing we did is that we went out and said, you can nominate your community to be part of this project. You know, we're not going to come and find you. You're going to come to us and say, hey, we want to have the DSO perform in our community for free. We're creating an online process. People submitted their things online. And then we had votes. We had nearly 14,000 people in the Metro Detroit community vote for their favorite communities to win one of our concerts. So that was the first thing we did. The second thing we did, this is so cute, we had a conducting contest. Each community concert ends with a member of the community. Oh, that got ahead of itself. Each concert ends with a member of our community, a member of that community conducting the DSO in the finale, The Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa, which is a very popular national march in the United States. So we, again, said, let's not pick these kids behind a curtain. Let's have them submit for this online. So we asked them to go to Instagram and share submission videos. In each community, we'd pick a kid to win. So I just have to share this because it's so cute. Let's take a look at one of our applicants for the conducting contest. Thank you. She's quite good. I think she might be the next Leonard Slatkin for our community. And the last thing we did is we had a kind of spin on the selfie contest in the neighborhood communities. We didn't require it to be a selfie, but we said send us your kind of most fun or proud or kind of cool moments from the community concerts. You see two high school students, they're posing with that's not the maestro himself, that's a cutout that we had there so people could kind of have their own photos. And then, of course, we have these three girls. They're at home getting dressed up for the concert. Then they're there with their parents arriving. And then finally, they actually met not the cutout, but the real Leonard Slatkin at the concert. And again, creating those sort of memories and sharing them online are just priceless. They bring us such joy and pride. And like I say, they spread the message of who we are and what we represent in a much different way than we could ever do ourselves. And then the final social campaign I want to share briefly is our IKEA flash mob. And again, let's take a look for just a second at the video, and then I'll tell you just a thing or two about it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. There's three reasons I love that. The first is that that was actually a staff and musician jointly led project. Our communications director and our bass clarinetist were kind of throwing ideas around, and they said, hey, what if we go to IKEA and do a flash mob and capture it? That's the first thing I love about it. The second thing is that, again, it merges the online and the offline world. We chose that location because we were launching a new neighborhood series of concerts in the suburb where that IKEA is located. So it brought those two worlds together. And the third thing is when it did go online, again, it had that calling card effect. That video was viewed so many times and by so many different people and actually generated coverage for the DSO. We had a huge feature on National Public Radio back in the States because they saw that video and got interested in us. It actually also attracted the attention of a major press outlet in the U.S. that we're talking to about a potential feature story in the future. So it worked for us on so many different levels. What are our social media values very quickly that link all these things? Strong, consistent online voice. We do content-based postings. We're not using clickbait. Pictures and photos and relevant and valid information that people want to hear. We have narratives that travel across platforms from Facebook to Twitter to Instagram and so on. We use hashtags to amplify content and sort of collate activity. We encourage sharing everywhere and anywhere, even in the hall, as you saw with DSO Selfie. We believe in two-way relationships. We're communicating with the audience and we're part of the experience with them. Ultimately, all boils down to one fact. We're trying to foster the community within and turn them on to be the real creators and owners of their DSO experience. So very briefly, in my last minute or two, I just want to tell you what we're doing on web and mobile, because this is where I think some of this drives back to some of the core activities that we need to engage in to be successful as an institution. There are really two key trends that we've noticed in the web, and these are the things that we try to keep top of mind as we're building out our web experiences. One is that people are really after customized experiences. I call it the Amazon effect, and I think Amazon is big in Europe as well now, but people expect that everything is all about them when they log on. It's going to tell them what you need and suggest things for you and all these sort of things. And the other big move in web is that the move to mobile. You've got to be available on tablets and mobile phones and phablets, which are the combinations between tablets and phones, and all those sort of things. And the cool thing is if you look behind it, technology helps us democratize personalized experiences. We used to only be able to provide a personalized experience for the most important, quote-unquote, important people in our family, the major donors or the major sponsors. Of course, we could reach out to them and give them things that were all about them and who they were, but we couldn't do that for the thousands of people entering the concert hall every day. Now we can recreate some of that experience through web and through mobile and through technology. We can know a little about who you are, and we can deliver things to you that speak personally to your experience. So here's one very simple example, and that's our website. We relaunched our website with a new look and skin just a few months ago. So if you were just to go to our website as a first-timer, you'd see this. If you're a governing member, a member of one of our leadership donor circles at the DSO, you'd go to the website and you'd see this. Oh, what happened there? There you go. Have to go ahead. You guys remember this? Wasn't that fun? If you're a governing member, when you log into our website, you'd see this. Color palette changes. It says on the top under logo, governing members, it welcomes you by name, Mr. Harrison. And as you click through the site, you'd have privileges. Your fees would be waived on your ticket sales, things that we do for our governing members to the box office, we now deliver online. If you're a student and you're part of our sound card program, you'd log in and you would see this experience. And as you went through the concert calendar, the concerts that are available exclusively to students in our sound card program, you'd be able to pick and choose those and put them into your shopping cart and you'd be able to check out. By the way, we have a program at the DSO called Sound Card. If you're a student, $25 fee, and every single concert is free to you all year. So it's a pretty cool program that we offer. Mobile usage is on the rise. There's no secret behind that. At our own DSO site, we've nearly doubled mobile traffic each of the past 2 years. The green and the yellow together our mobile phones and tablets. 50% of DSO emails are now opened on a mobile device. As web traffic trends mobile, we're developing a mobile-first mindset. Because if our audience is moving there and we're not there to meet them, we're going to lose out. So things like the selfie contest that encourage people to use their mobile phone in the hall, there's another valuable layer to it. They're now learning to associate the DSO with their mobile device and learning to trust us in that space. So now when they go to shop and they shop with their mobile device, they're going to know that we're there for them and use it. So all these things sort of link up and connect and push us into that mobile-first mindset. So I want to share one brief anecdote before I leave the stage. You know, just earlier this year in February, our orchestra went on tour to Florida. It was a 6-concert tour. And the first night in Palm Beach, we did something a little bit different. When our maestro Leonard Slatkin walked out on stage for the encore, he didn't turn to the orchestra. Instead, he first turned to the audience. And he asked them to take their phones out of their pocket. He said, turn them back on and take a picture or a video and share it with your friends. This was during the encore of the performance. And what happened in that moment, I think, is that we summed up so much of what we've been trying to accomplish at the DSO the past few years. We showed that we're an organization that embraces change, that is looking to define a new culture, that trusts in and believes our audience, and that wants to break down barriers to access. Now, none of that would have happened if that moment just happened sort of without any background. But because we have spent 3 or 4 years building this new culture and this new framework for how we engage with our audience, this moment happened with complete sincerity and authenticity. And that, my friends, is the DSO Live story. So thank you, muchas gracias, merci beaucoup. Thank you.